إن الحمد لله نحمده ونستعينه ونستغفره ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا وسيئات أعمالنا من يهده الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلل فلا هادي له أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله يا أيها الذين آمنوا اتقوا الله حق تقاته ولا تموتن إلا وأنتم مسلمون يا أيها الناس اتقوا ربكم الذي خلقكم من نفس واحدة وخلق منها زوجها وبث منهما رجالا كثيرا ونساء واتقوا الله الذي تساءلون به والأرحام إن الله كان عليكم رقيبا يا أيها الذين آمنوا اتقوا الله وقولوا قولا سديدا يصلح لكم أعمالكم ويغفر لكم ذنوبكم ومن يطع الله ورسوله فقد فاز فوزا عظيما أما بعد فإن خير الكلام كلام الله وخير الهدي هدي محمد صلى الله عليه وآله وسلم وشر الأمور محدثاتها وكل محدثة بدعة وكل بدعة ضلالة وكل ضلالة في النار أما بعد if we say now that we thank Allah everybody will know why we have to thank him we will not have to start explaining why we thank Allah especially if we say we thank Allah for bringing us back here We would not need to start asking, start making ta'lilat, why we think that we should specifically thank him for bringing us back here. It will not need explanations. It will not need hujjah, proofs, because it is self-proving. It is very clear to everybody. It was just one day we said, okay, inshallah, next week we will start reading Aqidatul Raziyyin. Brother, come close. The brother who is leaning. You are. إذا تخرج من المسجد. أيوة لا ينبغي للإنسان أن يعتزل عن الناس. أيوة. So. We said we were going to read Aqidatul Raziyyin, the Aqidah as was taught specifically gathered by the two Imams. We remember the two of them, Abu Hatim al-Razi, Abu Hatim Muhammad ibn Idris al-Razi, and his colleague al-Imam Abu Zur'at al-Razi, Ubaydullah ibn Abdul Karim. We thought that we would read the Aqidah. These two people traveled all around the Muslim world. So when they returned home to Ar-Ray, the son of Abu Hatim, Abu Abdul Rahman, Muhammad, he asked his father and Abu Zur'a, what was the belief you found the scholars of the city upon? What were they upon? And he started to explain to him what the ulama were upon in the various cities. And he was documenting them. Some of the scholars have titled this book as Aqidatu A'immatil Amsar, the Aqidah of the scholars of the various cities of Islam. What were they upon? And we gave ourselves a buy. We say, inshallah, next week we'll start reading the book. This is the next week. And that was sometime in March. So since then, March, April, May, June, July, August, September. Which month are we now? We say tomorrow inshallah, and that's inshallah. It is inshallah. Cool. So that meet was not to be except 7 months after. How many times would you tell someone, inshallah, we'll see in the office tomorrow? By the tomorrow, the person was dead. So that is how ذَلِكُمُ اللَّهُ رَبُّكُمْ لَهُ الْمُلْكُ. That is how your Lord does what He wants. The sovereignty and authority belongs to Him. Several issues. From one issue, it started with COVID-19. At the time, COVID-19 was just starting. And I remember I was mentioning in that class that the country should take this matter very serious, because other peoples of the world are taking it very serious. And then cities were locked down. Some cities are still locked down till as I speak. In Europe, the UK is locked down. About 4 days ago, they announced a 4 week lockdown. France is locked down. They are locked down. Because they said there's a new wave of the spread of COVID-19 in their cities. And it became a disease that killed over 200,000 people inside America. 200,000 died. This is the number that we are recorded. Because some people died in their homes unrecorded. They said it. So something would happen in our present day computer world. In the not world of nuclear weapons and security and 200,000 people will die inside America. In the United States, one doctor told me once that pride became lost. There's what they call the American pride. I'm an American. You know, they have that pride. That pride, they lost it when COVID-19 came upon them. You can't say, I'm an American. They can't say so. And they began to beg countries for face mask. Face mask. Surgical mask. The green one you put on the face. They started begging, send us surgical masks. America, the US. So Allah does what He wants. What is the size of that virus? So small. So small. May Allah protect all of us. Unfortunately, some of the people said it will be so devastating in Africa that you will pick dead bodies on the streets, Ali. But Allah showed that this is His power. In fact, someone said in his thinking that he thought that that disease went round, and especially in our own country. When we started lockdowns in Nigeria, if you want to lock down Bere in Ibadan, how will you lock down Bere? Do you know Bere? Ojo, how will you lock down Ojo? When about 15, 20 houses are all linked together, how do you lock down that place that can't be community? So the governor said, I can't lock down anywhere. I don't know what Allah will do. What? And then Allah started it with him. So when he survived, he said, oh, it means it can be survived. There are a lot of lessons around COVID-19. A lot of lessons. And Haram al-Makki became a place that was completely empty. Masjid al-Haram. Completely empty. And less than 10,000 people would perform Hajj. Hajj of 6 million, 7 million would be performed by 10,000 people. How will they be in the Mashayikh? In the places where are the locations of Hajj? How will they be there? They themselves will feel that, have we come for Hajj? Hajj. For me, that was my biggest worry. In Ramadan. And the heads of households become a imma in their house, leading salawah. Husbands became Hufaz of Quran. whether they wanted it or not. They were leaving the house. The entire 30 days of Ramadan, fortunately the Ramadan was 30. Cool? And on the day of Eid, the heads of homes became A'immatul A'yad. Our homes became the Eid grounds. Cool? These are big lessons for us. Very big lessons. Very big lessons. And then we gradually moved out of that. Then there's another fitna in our own country. It was a big fitna. It was a big fitna that lives were lost, people died, people were wounded, businesses were destroyed. I saw a video of Bode Thomas. I know Bode Thomas very well because we had an office around Bode Thomas sometime between 2003 and 2007 or 8. So I used to visit Bode Thomas very well. And I think in 2018, we attended a nikah in a masjid that was close to Bode Thomas. You know what Bode Thomas, left, right, businesses, big businesses, left and right, they were brought down. Bode Thomas left, right, during the crisis, during the protests, was brought down. And then we went into another lockdown. Till we find ourselves here today. So we deserve to thank Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. There's a report that I've always ever remembered when these issues were just coming, following themselves. That the Messenger alayhi salatu wasalam said that towards the end of time, one fitna will emerge. The mu'min will think that maybe my time will come in this fitna. Allah will save him from the fitna. And as that one ended, another one will start again. He'll be thinking, maybe it is this time that I will go. That one will come. Another one will start again. He starts thinking, maybe my time is near. Till the end of time. May Allah protect all of us. And make us live the dunya in the best of times for us. May Allah forgive all our shortcomings. There are also the good sides of it. There are the best sides of it. Many brothers started struggling to learn more because you became the mufti of your family. They will ask you, how do we slaughter a ram? How do we do this? How do we? So you'll be the one bringing a fatawa. I was saying, people used to say, what are they going to do in a halqa every Sunday, every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday? There are classes every day. I said, they would have known now. The people who always ask, what are they learning? What are they reading? That we talked about Ahkamul Eidain, ko? We discussed Ahkamul Salatul Jum'ah, ko? Okay. Some will be asking, what are they doing there? He would have known now when the lockdown came. It's okay. And I used to say then that we should learn it because we can find ourselves in a situation where we will be the ones having to explain how we found ourselves. For me, it was the first time I was slaughtering a ram. I've never slaughtered a ram with my hand. First time ever. Place a ram on the ground. You know the sunnah of slaughtering a ram. You place the left side of the ram on the ground. You place your right leg on the stomach of the animal. You grab the head together with the ears to cover the nose with your left and open the neck. And then you slaughter with your right hand. All these are from the sunnah of slaughtering. But it was the first time I was slaughtering myself as an individual. Slaughter a ram. I'd never slaughter, and it's big ibadah. Slaughtering a ram, zab. It's big ibadah to slaughter a ram for Allah. Because you will see that Allah has just brought down these animals for you. وَذَلَّلْنَاهَا لَكُمْ كُوْ فَمِنْهَا رَكُوبُكُمْ وَمِنْهَا يَأْكُلُونَ ولكم فيها منافع ومشارب أفلا تشكرون أفلا يشكرون. Will human beings not be grateful to Allah? For me, it was the first time. It was the first time my children were seeing me making Eid at home. Especially Eid al-Kabir. This one, as big as he is, he never saw me make Eid at home. First time they were seeing me making Eid al-Kabir at home. Never. Last 16 years, the first time I'm making Eid at home. So may Allah accept it all. I'm mentioning that there are good sides of it too. We need to look at. We thank Allah for them. He gave many of us, many of the brothers, many people found more time reading the Quran. Many people found more time to make istighfar because nobody was going anywhere. And Allah showed all of us his rububiyah. For 2-3 months, nobody went anywhere and everybody was eating something. So if we say Allah feeds all of us, some people can say, how is it that Allah is feeding us? I'm working. Okay, don't go to work and you'll be eating food. Nobody was going anywhere and everybody was eating, big or small. Even when we are going to work from morning to night, our food was still between big and small. So when we are not going anywhere, the food was between big and small. So everybody were eating food and nobody was going anywhere. Allah showed us his rububiyah. I will keep all of you at home. If you think that it's your job that feeds you, okay, you will not go out for that job. I will be feeding you. Okay. Government even said, oh yeah, give them food. The food didn't reach us. Alas. We've released 100,000 tons of food. Where are they? Everybody was asking, where is the food? The food was somewhere. So it was as if Allah held it back, saying, no, let me do what I want first. Keep your food. So the food did not come to the people. The food was somewhere resting. Some of them got expired. That is not the business of your Lord. He wants to do something. Inna rabbaka fa'alun lima yurid. Allah is the one who is doing something. All of us, we are maf'ulun. We are done things. Allah is al-Qadir. He's the one doing something. We are done things. The rest of us, we are done. The one doing is Allah. His laws supersede all other things and laws. What he wants, what he wills at every point in time. There were a lot of lessons in it. Different times, different people looked at different things. We picked different lessons. We're all at home. Those who like to sleep will sleep, sleep, sleep. They will be tired of sleeping. Those who like to watch videos will watch, watch, watch. They will be tired. Allahu Akbar. So it's a very big, big time. It's 7 months. Someone who has a store in Makkah, he traveled out to his country. He's just going to Makkah yesterday or today. His intention, let me quickly go and come back. He went, I couldn't come back inside. All the stores around Masjid al-Haram were locked. They're still locked except food stores, where food is sold to those who are now allowed to come in to make Umrah. It's a very, very big thing for the world. Europe, I think UK specifically, about 3 or 4 days ago, how many billion pounds did they say they will, you know the meaning? They will print money because no economy was working and huge companies were falling. Huge airlines, some airports witnessed Emirates said they have over 100 and something planes parked in their airports. No plane was going anywhere. Who was flying to where? Nobody was flying to anywhere. Except those on emergencies and all of this. They need special clearance and all of this. And some of the people began to doubt it. Is it really true? Until they started hearing that people died. Abba Kyari died. May Allah forgive you. The people started thinking, oh, I think it is real. And then the past governor of Oyo State, Ishaq Ajimobiko, may Allah forgive him too. That was why I first of all mentioned his name, Ishaq. He's always proud to show that he's a Muslim. Against all odds, when he built that masjid along that Ojo Road, he called the masjid Ishaq Ajimobi Masjid. I got aware that some people inside his house did not want him to name that masjid Ishaq. He told them, I am going to name this masjid Ishaq. And he named the masjid Ishaq Ajimobi. It started with Ishaq. The first day that I passed there, I saw it. I told the brother who was with me, I said, go and write it down. This masjid will be the best thing for this man when he lives and when he dies. Masjid, this masjid, you will see, it will be among the best things he has ever done when he's alive and when he would have died. When he died, where was the janazah observed on him? The same masjid. So masjid is from the things that retains a Muslim. Masjid, Allah will use the masjid to keep you alive. I mean, you're mentioning alive. Even when you have passed away. When we go to Makkah, what do we go to look for? Masjid al-Haram, built by Nabi Ibrahim alayhi salam. When we go to Medina, what do we go to look for? If we have the opportunity to visit Jerusalem, what do we want to go and look for there? Masjid al-Aqsa, Masjid al-Nabawi, Masjid al-Haram. Masjid. Allah sustains people's mentioning with masajid. There are a lot of other things that happened that I'm sure you know better than I know. I'm just trying to bring back our memories. Just trying to call us back. May Allah forgive whatever sins we would have committed at that time. Whatever good deeds we were able to do, may Allah multiply the rewards for us. We have some Muslim brothers, no doubt, who would have passed away during the COVID-19. May Allah forgive all of them. May Allah forgive all of them. May Allah forgive all of them. After the COVID-19, some people, nothing happened to them. They only died during COVID-19, not from COVID-19. But their death came at the time of COVID-19, but not related to COVID-19. May Allah forgive all of them. Both men and women and children, everybody. May Allah forgive all of them. And then the fitna came, the fitna of protests. The very, very big fitna. Some of the people were pouring fuel. They were fueling the fitna. Unfortunately, in the name of Islam, those are the worst amongst those people who participated in it. Those fueling it in the name of Allah. As if Allah has supported fawda, as if our Sharia has supported these kinds of disturbances. No. Allah will not rule that people do something that will bring about these kinds of situations that we have seen. People's property being looted, people's life. How many women were evil came upon them during that time? From men. Those ones were not reported. Yes. Women were raped, homes were destroyed, people's property, lives were taken, people were killed. There was an article in one of the dailies yesterday or today. They said, end SARS protests. Between police brutality and brutality of police. Is it not so? Between police brutality and the brutality of police. That is, they are discussing. People say police is brutal, Abi. How about the people being brutal against police? The two of them were saying. You say people are doing something bad. You do exact thing you say they are doing. You say people are stealing money. You go and steal too. So how does the thing become corrected? So may Allah protect all of us. But there is a major issue too that was noticed. And it is possible that things like that come up from time to time. And that we need to know, how does a Muslim respond to those kinds of situations? How does a Muslim behave in the times of fitna? It is good to understand fiqh ul fitan, the fiqh, the Islamic rulings regarding fitans, trials and tribulations. When they happen, what should a Muslim do? I'm sure many of the people will be confused. Go. So what do we do now? What do we do now? People will be confused. Should I fight somebody who comes to your house? Or what do I do? Because it became like people just rush into any house and start pillaging the house. So what does the head of the home do in those situations? Does he fight back? Does he just hand them over his property? What does the Muslim do? How does he talk in the circumstance? There are many of our brothers who, when they start talking, I say, keep quiet. People wanted to be breaking news. Why should you want to be a newsbreaker in the times of fitna? Why? You want breaking news to come to you from you at the time of fitna? Many people, especially because I'm just on Twitter and WhatsApp. So if I find somebody on status green, so I say, keep quiet. Stop talking. It is from the adab of the times of fitan that someone keeps quiet. So that your tongue does not participate in it. How many people's tongue and hand participated in it? And we've been warned against participating in fitan. People participated in it with their mouth, with their hands, and then some of the people with their bodies. So if you say you were not there, how about your hand? Especially when it became a bigger fitan. Yes, there were palliatives that were stored and not distributed to the people. Some people started to blame the government. Why should governments also keep it? What's your business with that? Are you government? Will you be asked about that by Allah? So why not keep quiet? It became a means for them also to begin to abuse government and spread that abuse. Is that lawful for a Muslim? You see now. So, but does one wrong thing justify another wrong thing? It doesn't. So some of these things were because I have not heard us talking about fiqh ul fitan. And if you go to the books of hadith, if you go to Sahih al-Bukhari, Sahih al-Muslim, and other books of Sunan, the Ma'ajim, and others, you will always find abwabul fitan wal malahim. Abwabul fitan wal malahim. Just like you find abwab on tahara, abwab on salah, abwab on zakah, you find abwab on fitan. When there is fitna, how do you conduct yourself? The Prophet Muhammad, he taught us how to handle ourselves. But have we been studying these kinds of issues? I don't know if we have been doing it. But I have not heard us talking about them. So when we thought to go back to our classes, I felt, because we wouldn't know the days that are ahead in our country now. Usually when a people start by revolting publicly like this against their government, they hardly stop. May Allah protect us. Abdullah ibn Umar radiallahu anhu shed tears over this when the people rose against Uthman ibn Affan. He said, oh, so you people want to turn us to an ummah wherein once the leader is, you rise up against them, you kill them and remove them, you bring another one. He started crying, saying, oh Allah, we don't want this kind of history. Said it was the ways of the Persians. They are the ones who do that. Each time government does something, people rise up against them. They'll be troubled. There'll be trouble. Each time people feel uncomfortable with one policy of government, they rise against it. In Lagos, there's a sitting now. What do they call it? Parliament of Inquiry? Huh? Judicial Panel of Inquiry. The CBN said some accounts should be frozen, Abby. Whether right or wrong, we don't know. But we know that there are extant laws guiding that. Are there no laws guiding such things? Will that institution take that decision without a law guiding it? The two young boys that are in that committee, they in protest went out of the committee. So each time one father says something to his son, the son does not like, he wants to protest and rise against his father. The name of protest. People get used to it. May Allah protect us. So it means that we need to start learning how does a Muslim behave. What are the ahkam in Islam that guides the Muslim's behavior during the times of fitan? Like we mentioned, these issues occur in the books of hadith, but we hardly go back to them. We're always busy with issues of tahara and all others. We are not discussing fitan and how to handle them. And there are rulings regarding that. So I just started thinking about looking for a book to read to us about these ahkam. A book that will be easy for all and sundry to understand. We'll read, will be explaining briefly. But there are a lot of books from both the past and the present amongst our ulama. And the oldest single compilation, apart from those you would find in other books of hadith, like Al-Bukhari, Muslim, and other books of hadith, the oldest single compilation that I found, because this Imam is even before Al-Imam Al-Bukhari, and that's Al-Imam Nu'aym ibn Hammad Al-Marwazi, Abu Abdullah. He has a book that he has titled Kitab Al-Fitan. It occurs in two volumes with this tahqiq of our Sheikh, one of our teachers, Sheikh Samir ibn Amin al-Zuhayr, rahimahullah, hafidhahullah, hafidhahullah. We still spoke 3 days ago. This is his tahqiq of Kitab al-Fitan by Al-Imam al-Hafiz Abu Abdullah Nu'aym ibn Hammad. He's a great scholar of hadith and fiqh and aqidah. This Imam was killed and thrown into a well. May Allah forgive him. Why? Because he was standing firm upon the Sunnah. He was killed during the fitna of Khalqul Quran. He was with those who were taken away with Al-Imam Al-Buwayti. When Al-Buwayti was one of the students of Al-Imam Al-Shafi'i. When Al-Imam Al-Shafi'i passed away, Al-Imam Al-Buwayti took his seat where he used to teach in Egypt. So when he was commanded to announce that the Quran was created, we know the fitna of Khalqul Quran, and he answered in the negative that the Quran is not a creature of Allah, it is rather the word of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. This Imam Al-Buwayti was asked to be brought to Baghdad from Misr. Go and look at the map between Egypt and Baghdad on his feet and tied with chains on his feet and hands and neck. While they were on the way, Nu'aym ibn Hammad passed away. So he was thrown into a well by those people who were taking them to Baghdad. So usually people refer to him as Imamun min A'immati Sunnah, Al-Imam Nu'aym ibn Hammad Al-Marwazi. He has compiled a book about the ahadith from the Prophet Muhammad alayhi salatu wasalam, and he gave their asanid between himself and the Prophet, and those narrations also from the companions radiallahu anhum and others amongst the tabi'un regarding fitan. So he titled it Kitabul Fitan. Is the oldest and the biggest that I know regarding fitan. Nu'aym ibn Hamad, Kitabul Fitan. And someone who has done something similar to that from the later scholars after him was Al-Imam Al-Qurtubi, Abu Al-Abbas, Sahib Al-Mufhim. He has a sharh of Sahih Muslim, Abu Al-Abbas Al-Qurtubi. He also did a compilation on Al-Fitan Wal-Malahim, Fitan and the Signs of the Last Hour. But Nu'aym ibn Hamad is just restricted to fitan, trials and tribulations that will happen from time to time. And then how does the Muslim handle those situations? He compiled them in the book. After that, we have At-Tadhkira by Imam Al-Qurtubi. And following At-Tadhkira, we have Kitab al-Fitan wal-Malahim, also by Al-Hafiz ibn Kathir. That one occurs at the last volume of his book, Al-Bidayah to Al-Nihaya. We know Al-Bidayah wa Al-Nihaya by Al-Hafiz ibn Kathir. It has Kitab al-Fitan wal-Malahim at the end of it. And so on till our own times. Someone who now goes round all the scholars of hadith to gather what they have said regarding Al-Fitan wal-Malahim was this Sheikh Mustafa Al-Adawi. He's from the scholars of Egypt. He has this book he has titled As-Sahih al-Musnad. It is the difference between what he has done and what all others have done. All others have compiled the ahadith, whether sahih or da'if. They just compiled them, gathered them together. This is all that has been reported about this issue that I can find. But for Sheikh Mustafa Al-Adawi, he has just only compiled those ones that, based on his rulings, they are authentic from the various major sources of ahadith that he has come across, according to him. He said this, he titled the book As-Sahih al-Musnad. You see, al-Musnad, it has a meaning. It means those reports are the marfu'at alone. He says, As-Sahih al-Musnad min ahadith al-fitan wal-malahim wa ashrat al-sa'a. Very big book, very beneficial. You always have to come back to it. He has a lot of work on it regarding authenticity of ahadith. So sometimes if you read, because Sheikh Samir Zuhairi, rahimahullah, hafizahullah, he mentioned in the muqaddimah of his tahqiq that he found that if he wants to give the rulings on each of the hadith, it will take a long time and this book needs to come. So let's push the book and then work on the tahqiq of the book. So sometimes you can read a hadith here, you want to find out about its ruling. You come and look for it here. It would mean that according to Sheikh Mustafa Al-Adawi, that hadith is either sahih or what? Or hasan. If you find it in Sheikh Mustafa Al-Adawi's work. And then he's from the scholars of our times. These are two extremes that I have gone. Apart from those who have based their works on the books of hadith, there are those amongst the scholars who have written books on fiqhul fitan, the ahkam, Islamic rulings about the times of trials and tribulations. One of them is Sheikh Abdul Razak ibn Sheikh Abdul Muhsin Al-Abbad. He's also one of our teachers. At least if you have been sitting in front of somebody 3, 4, 5 times in 1 year over 15 years, you can confidently ascribe to him. So Sheikh Abdul Razak ibn Abdul Muhsin is from the teachers in Masjid al-Nabawi in Medina. He has this book, Athar al-Fitan. What are the things that when you see them, you know there's fitna? When some things happen, there is fitna. The leftover traces of fitna. When you see that, you know there is fitna. Whether during or after the fitna, they will make you realize that, oh, there was fitna. So he referred to this book as Afarul Fitan. The asul of the book was a lecture he delivered, and it was compiled. He mentioned about 10 athar, 10 things to know that there is fitna, whether when the fitna is happening or immediately after the fitna happens. And then individuals, what do fitan do to them? For me, it is the most scary thing that he mentioned in this book. You see a noble person, learned person, a person of sunnah, when he gets involved in fitna, his nobility comes down. It's one of the athar of fitan. A noble person who gets involved in fitan, when he gets involved in it, Allah brings him down because of the fitna he got involved in. Someone who will not be abused will become abused. Why? He got involved in the fitna. Someone who would not ordinarily be criticized will be criticized and cursed. Why? The position he took during the fitna. He said those are from the athar of fitna. May Allah protect all of us. It's a very, very nice book. One reason I'm mentioning it is that we may not be able to read all the books, but we can go and start looking for them. Our brothers can go and start looking for these books. You can find them on the net. The important thing is that read them and learn from them. A very, very good book. Atharul Fitan. It's a very good book. A good reader will finish this book after Salatul Zuhur, and he will still be able to perform Taylula before Salatul Asr, inshallah. But if you read it with the reading of Bahas is that when a scholar mentions a hadith, you go back to the books of hadith, you check that hadith, you check the sharh of the hadith, and what others amongst the scholars have said about the book. Ulama refer to that as Qira'atul Bahas. You read it by way of researching. If you read it like that, inshallah, it may take you a week to finish the book. And that will be if you have a good library, inshallah. It's a very good book, Atharul Fitan. Very, very good book by Sheikh Abdul Razak Ibn Abdul Muhsin Al-Abbad. The other one that I also find very, very good, and this is by Sheikh Sulaiman Al-Ruhayli. The Sheikh Sulaiman Al-Ruhayli that you know, Hafizahullah, very, very learned person. Sheikh Abdul Rahman Al-Banna, who just passed away, he says we are going to become our Uthaymeen in these times. He was referring to Sheikh Sulaiman Al-Ruhayli. And if you read Sheikh Sulaiman Al-Ruhayli's works or you listen to him, his presentations are like the presentations of Sheikh Muhammad ibn Salih Al-Uthaymeen. So when I read that statement from Sheikh Abdul Wahab Al-Banna Al-Misri, who just died recently also, it's one of the fitan during this lockdown. Big scholars passed away. May Allah protect us. Big scholars passed away within the last 7 months that we had not sat here. So Sheikh Sulaiman Al-Ruhayli also, this is also from a lecture that he delivered. He titled it Fiqhul Fitan. Sheikh Sulaiman Al-Ruhayli. So he mentioned some qawaid, some basic rules, some usul, dawabit, that are regarding issues of fitan and how the Muslim handles himself during the fitan. They are 25 in number, 26 in number. Al-Aslu Sadisu Al-Ishroon. That is the last one. Very, very good book. Each of the points will make you start thinking about yourself. Fiqhul Fitan. There are rulings regarding how a Muslim conducts himself during the periods of trials and tribulations. May Allah protect all of us. And some of the scholars have written forwards to this book, like Sheikh Salih ibn Sa'd As-Suhaymi, Hafizahullah also, and others. Very, very good book. He delivered the lecture inside Jami'atul Islamiyya in Medina. It was compiled into a book. Sheikh Sulaiman Al-Ruhayli, Fiqhul Fitan. Very good book. There is also Ma'alimun Fi Awqatil Fitani Wal Nawazil. Ma'alim. When you travel from here to as far as say Kaduna, if you are traveling from Abuja to Kaduna, that long road, it's usually 1 hour, 40 minutes. But I remember that those days, I used to drive it in 50 minutes. There are people who know that. I used to drive Kaduna Abuja 50 minutes, those days. But I don't think I can drive that now. We are getting old, Abi. I used to drive. Not that I drove. It was a common thing, 50, 55 minutes, 60 minutes, on the dot of 1 hour, I'm in Abuja from Kaduna. It's a long road, though. Buses will even take 3 hours. But we don't like to spend the entirety of our lives on the road, go. So this, what I'm going to say about that is that when you travel, you see some stones on the road, go. They will say KD 75 kilometers, KD 70 kilometers. It will be reducing till you get. Those stones are called ma'alim. They are going to guide you and make you know how your journey is faring as far as that journey is concerned. So when this sheikh said ma'alimun fi awqatil fitani wa nawazil, that is guiding stones, guidelines about the periods of fitan, trials and tribulations, wa nawazil, and big events, when big things happen, how do you conduct yourself? So he gave us guidelines also from the book of Allah and the messenger sunnah alayhi salatu wasalam. There are a number of them that this Sheikh Abdulaziz As-Sadhan has mentioned in this book. He titled the book Ma'alimun fi Awqatil Fitani wal Nawazil. It's a very, very, very good book. And he mentioned 42 guidelines, 42 basic rules, 42 that he mentioned. Very good book too. It has the taqdeem of Sheikh Saleh Fawzan Al-Fawzan. That is a forward from Sheikh Saleh Fawzan, Sheikh Abdulaziz As-Sadhan. There is also this book by Sheikh Saleh Ibn Abdulaziz Al-Sheikh. Saleh Ibn Abdulaziz Al-Sheikh. He has a book, Al-Bawabit Al-Shar'iyya Li Mawqif Al-Muslim Fi Al-Fitan. Al-Bawabit Al-Shar'iyya. The guidelines from the Sharia of Islam. لِمَوْكِفِ الْمُسْلِمِ regarding the position that a Muslim will take في الفتن when there is fitan. الضوابط الشرعية لِمَوْكِفِ الْمُسْلِمِ في الفتن. It's a very, very nice book. He also gave it as a lecture and it was converted into a book. He gave about 15 ضوابط, each of them very, very important. In his own case, he said the first dawabit is that be careful, don't just be acting. The first dawabit about fitan is that don't be the one who is just reacting. Something happened, he starts reacting. I don't want to use that expression, say cool down, be yourself. That is the first dawabit he mentioned. It's a very, very good book. We should look for it and study it. It will help us a lot during the times of fitan, some of which we have seen and some of which we are still in. Because till today we are still under curfew in our own state. By 8 p.m. everybody should be at home now, go? May Allah protect all of us. So he titled it, Al-Dawabit Al-Shar'iyya Limawqif Al-Muslim Fil Fitan. Sheikh Saleh Ibn Abdul Aziz Al-Sheikh. Very, very good book. One of the scholars from Iraq, his name is Hassan al-Iraqi. You know, in Iraq there is a lot of fitan. They've been under fitan for over 20 years in Iraq. So he wrote a book on that, Ru'yatun Shar'iyyatun lil fitani wal nawazil fi sahat al-Iraqiyya. Ru'yatun Shar'iyyatun lil fitani wal nawazil في الساحة العراقية رؤية شرعية. The views of the Sharia للفتن والنوازل regarding the tribulations and big events that have been happening في الساحة العراقية, on the Iraqi grounds, on the lands of Iraq, in the region of Iraq. This is what he has titled this work, and he has gathered along with it statements from some of the big scholars of Islam in our own times, Sheikh Rabi ibn Hadi al-Madkhali, Sheikh Ubaid ibn Abdullah al-Jabri, Sheikh Saleh ibn Saad al-Suhaymi, Sheikh Muhammad ibn Hadi Ahmed Khalil. He has gathered some of their comments regarding these issues, and he has compiled them in this book. Very, very, very good book. Very good book. It's a very old book with me. Very good book. It has one thing that you may not find in all others that we have mentioned. He properly discussed what is fitan in Islam, or fitna in Islam, and the various meaning, about 15 different meanings that this word fitna may mean. He discussed each of the meanings and in the circumstances that each of those meanings would apply to that word al-fitna. Very, very good book. And he also discussed the basic rulings, how we recognize fitan, and the basic rulings, the things that lead to fitan. He also discussed it. Then he discussed asbabun najati min al-fitan. What are the means of getting saved or protected from fitan? The first of them he mentioned is taqwa Allah, fear Allah. That is, obey Allah, don't disobey him during the times of fitan. The second thing he mentioned, he said tahqiqul iman billahi ta'ala. Redefine and affirm your belief in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The third one, kasratul isti'adati billahi min al-fitan. Always pray and beg Allah to protect you from fitan. The fourth one, mutaba'atu rasuli alayhi salatu wasalam zahiran wa batina. Following the sunnah of the messenger alayhi salatu wasalam during fitan. Number five, at-tamassuku bi manhaji salafi salih. Be upon what the companions and their students were upon during fitan. Number six, luzumul ulama al-rabbaniyin wa akhzu kalamihim wa khususan fi zaman al-fitan. Sticking to the scholars of sunnah and taking to their advices during the times of fitan. He also mentioned i'tizalul fitan. Avoid it with your tongue, with your speech, with your, don't be a party to it. Avoiding fitan. He mentioned it. He also mentioned al-iktharu min at-ta'at. Getting involved in many more good deeds during the times of fitan. He mentioned others. He also even discussed the difference between al-fitanu wa nawazil, between trials and tribulations and big, big events. What are the differences between the two? You would have heard me be saying al-fitnatu wa nawazil, or al-fitanu wa nawazil. What is the difference between fitna and nazila? What is the difference between the two of them? This sheikh discussed, he was extensive in this matter. Sheikh Hassan al-Iraq, on issues regarding fitna, he titled the book Ru'yatun Shar'iyatun lil-fitani wal-nawazili fi al-sahat al-Iraqiyya. That's a very, very good book. Also, this is from Sheikh Abu al-Hussein Ali al-Hazzahi. I do not know the person of the sheikh, but I have this book with me. He titled it Al-Fitanu Trials, Suwaruha, how they occur, their forms, wa ilajuha, the solutions to them, wa liwiqayati minha, and how to get protected from fitan. It's a very good book too, inshallah. Very old book too with me. Also, on the issues of handling fitan, one of the scholars discussed some of the tabi'un and how they handle fitan. So he here in this work, he was discussing al-imam Mutarrif ibn Abdullah al-Shakhir. I'm sure we find him. He's from the scholars. If you read Bukhari, Sahih Muslim, you find his reports. Mutarrif. He also has a son, Abdullah ibn Mutarrif. So when he discussed the biography of this imam, he now discussed his roles when there was fitan. What did he do? He mentioned about seven things that this imam did during the time of fitan, and then he was supporting them with the verses of the Quran and ahadith from the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. It's a very, very good book too about fitan, because the imam is known for his avoidance of fitna. This imam, Mutarrif ibn Abdullah al-Shakhir, he avoided fitan. So his life is a model about how to relate with the rest of the people and with yourself during the times of of Fitna. It's a very, very good book too. This is also by one of the early Muslims, Al-Imam Al-Hafiz Ibn Al-Bana. It is called Ar-Risalatul Mughniyatu Fi Sukuti Wa Luzumil Buyut. Ar-Risalatul Mughniya Fi Sukuti Wa Luzumil Buyut. It's a brief discourse about being silent during the times of fitna and staying in your house during the times of fitna. Keep quiet. Stay in your house. And he based the entirety of this book. This imam is from the 4th century of Islam. He based this book on the hadith of Abdullah ibn Umar, who went to the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam and asked him about fitna, and he told him to hold his tongue and stay in his house. So the entirety of this book is based on that hadith regarding how we handle fitna. There are others. And the one that comes to mind now is the one by one of our teachers, Sheikh Abdul Karim ibn Abdullah Al-Khudayr. He is a member of Al-Lajnatul Da'imah. He is also a member of Kibarul Ulama in Saudi Arabia. One of the oldest scholars now you have. Very old, very well grounded in the science of hadith and fiqh. Sheikh Abdul Karim ibn Abdullah Al-Khudayr. He has a tahqiq of Fath al-Mughith by Al-Imam al-Sakhawi. You know the Alfiyah of Al-Imam al-Suyuti on Ilm al-Hadith. Alfiyah of Suyuti on Ilm al-Hadith. There is a sharh on it by Al-Imam al-Sakhawi, the student of Al-Hafiz ibn Hajar. Sheikh Abdul Karim al-Khudayr has a tahqiq on that in 5 volumes. Hafizahullah is still alive. He also did a sharh of Al-Alfiyah of Al-Hafiz al-Iraqi. He reads the Alfiyah of Hafiz al-Iraqi like you and I will read Surah al-Fatiha. And I was fortunate to be in that class. So if I read the book, I always think as if we're in the class. His sharh on Alfiyah of Iraqi when I was in Riyadh. Alhamdulillah. So he has a discourse in about 1.5 hours about fitan. He called it Hadiyu Salaf fil Fitan. The manners, the ways of how the early Muslims conducted themselves during the times of fitan. And that speech has been transcribed. It occurs in about 15 pages. He also discussed what is fitan, who are the Salaf, what does fitna mean, what does a Salaf, what does it mean, since he had said Hadiyu Salaf. He even also discussed Al-Hajj and the difference between Hadiyu and Assamt. He discussed these issues and then he started telling us how the early Muslims handled the period of fitna. It occurs in 15 volumes. It occurs in 15 pages. One of his works is he taught Al-Jami'u Al-Ahkam Al-Quran by Imam Al-Qurtubi. It occurs in 20 volumes. He taught it in a single masjid over a period of 15 years. Sheikh Abdul Karim Al-Khudayr. Well, very, very vast. And in almost all the sciences, he has a discourse on Rihlatul Ulama ila al-Hajj, the journeys of scholars to Hajj. Because when the ulama travel, they go for Hajj and come back, they always have so many things to say. So many of them wrote so many things on it. He was just invited, Sheikh, can you tell us some things about the experiences of the past scholars when they come on Hajj? And he started talking for about 1.5 hours. Subhanallah, if you listen to it, you'll be wondering, someone who was just called, Sheikh, can you please just tell us something? And he was mentioning the A'imma, their journeys and their experiences during Hajj. It's very, very, very vast. Hafizahullah. May Allah preserve him. Very learned too. My mind is so inclined that we should read that work. Because after I have introduced us to all of this, we can ask, so what are you saying now? What I'm saying is that I feel that we should read Sheikh Abdul Karim's work. It's in 15 pages. It's clear, simple, straightforward about how did the early Muslims handle themselves during the times of fitan. How do you salaf fil fitan? The reason we want to know about it, the Muslim should not be a person who is living in a time handling situations he does not have knowledge about. Some of the groups of Muslims you will find, they are not, they say yes, invite people to the path of Allah. What does that mean? If you want to invite people to the path of Allah, except that you invite them to the Ahkam Sharia. If you are not inviting them to Ahkam or Sharia, you invite them to the path of Allah so that they too invite to the path of Allah. What is the path of Allah you are inviting to? I come to your house, come out, follow me, let's go and invite people to the path of Allah. Those people come out, they follow me, let's go and invite people to the path of Allah. We become how many? Three or five. Okay, the five of us, we want to go and invite people to the path of Allah. We become how many? Seven, eight, nine. The 10 of us, we want to invite people to the path of Allah. We become how many? 15. There is a question one reasonable person amongst us should ask. What is that path of Allah you are inviting to? This is the way of Jama'ah to Tabligh, and it is bad. So we should base our deen, our religion about knowledge. This is what the Prophet said, alayhi salatu wasalam. Kul, say to the people, hadhihi sabili. This is my way. Adu ila Allah. I invite unto the path of Allah. Ala mada? Ala basira. Based on knowledge. Not just me alone. Ana wa mani tabani. Myself and those who are with me. This deen is a deen that Allah has placed upon knowledge. How? If I want to pray, I must know the rulings of salah. If I want to make wudu, I must know the rulings of wudu. If I'm washing my hand from here up to the elbow here, I must know why. If I'm raising it up, I must know why it is coming up. Who said so? Who taught me that I should wash my hand up to my upper arm? Who taught me that? I must know. So my deen will be ala basira, not ala taqlid. So if I'm fasting, I'm knowing what are the rulings guiding fasting. If I want to pay zakah, I want to know why am I paying what for zakah. Who will get what from my wealth from zakah? If I'm performing hajj, I want to know how, why should I do what during hajj? So my actions will be based on good knowledge. And then anticipation for reward. Don't tell me fadailul amal when the amal itself lafad nafihi. You say I should observe 2 units of prayer and I don't know how to pray. If I observe 2 units of prayer, Allah will give me 50 houses in Al-Jannah. Marhaba. But have I been able to pray correctly? It is after I have been able to pray correctly, you start telling me the promise for praying correctly. It is when I have prayed correctly that I should start looking for the rewards for praying 2 units of prayer. Now you did not teach the man how to pray correctly, and the correct way to pray is the way the messenger prayed, alayhi salatu wasalam. So our religion is based on basira, clear knowledge and insight, not upon emotions. Hey brothers, if I come here and start saying, oh brothers, 15 people don't know how to, they won't even tell you Tawheed. Tawheed? The point is that we need to know how to handle ourselves during the times of fitan. And that must be based on knowledge. Knowledge is what is in the Quran and the Sunnah of the Messenger, alayhi salatu wasalam. And I think that we should read the book by Sheikh Abdul Karim Al-Khudair. He actually had discussed it as a lecture, but it has been transcribed. I will get it out and send it to our brothers. They will print copies for us, inshallah, such that when we read it, each of us has a copy with him. We can read all along and follow along. We try to give brief explanations to those readings as we proceed Maybe we'll read it over 3, 4, 5 classes, inshallah. And then we find comfort and insights from it about how to handle. There is no doubt that sometimes we may have to come to some of these works to shed more light about some of the points that he will mention, to not just be a read for translation. Because if it is that, each of us can do that on our own. But it will be a read, inshallah, that will be followed with some additional benefits, inshallah, from other sources that Allah will guide us onto. Whatever we're able to do, may Allah bless it for us. May Allah guide us to that which is best for us. If there are one or two questions, we'll answer it. Otherwise, we'll call it a day today so that we rush back home. If there are one or two questions. Alaykum salam. Who? Did we hear his question? Are there reports? Are there ahadith or athar that show that when we say rahimahullah, we should only be saying it to someone who has passed away? Or when we say hafizahullah, we should only be saying it to someone who is still alive? One of those who have done a very good work on these kinds of statements, including radiyallahu anhu at-taraddi, is al-Imam al-Nawawi in his book Kitab al-Adhkar. I encourage us to go and read it. Very important. Kitab al-Adhkar by Imam al-Nawawi. He discussed these kinds of issues. Why is it that we say alayhi salam to some amongst the messengers, and then our own messenger we say alayhi salatu wasalam? If we say alayhi salatu wasalam to others amongst the messengers, is it wrong? Why do some people say karramallahu wajhahu when they mention Ali ibn Abi Talib? Is it right? Is it wrong? Can we say radiyallahu anhu to someone who is not a companion? Can we say that to him? These kinds of expressions. Al-Imam al-Nawawi discussed it in Kitab al-Adhkar. But more to your question is that jara alayhi amalu salaf al-salih. Because the meaning of your question is that what is the proof to say rahimahullah to someone who has passed away and hafizahullah to someone who is still alive? I say the evidence is jariyan amali salaf al-salih. We find our early Muslims doing that, and we have been asked to follow them, so we are following them. What is the evidence? Now, that is the way the early Muslims do it and say it, so we say as they say. That is the proof for it. The proof for saying rahimahullah if a person has passed away is that the early Muslims used to do so. When they mention the Aimah, say rahimahullah. If you go and start looking amongst the companions, you find that when the elder ones amongst the companions passed away and the younger ones wanted to mention, then they say rahimahullah. This one, I'm sure if a talib al-ilm goes into bahas from the books of hadith, he can come out with a juz. I tell you this, where the younger companions will be mentioning regarding the earlier older companions, and they'll be saying rahimahullah, because amongst the companions, abawa wa mekewa, there are elders and younger ones. Anas bin Malik used to say that. Say the elder ones amongst the companions, the elder ones amongst the companions, the elder ones amongst the companions. Anas said the elder ones amongst the companions, radiallahu anhum, they are the ones who can tell you about the face of the companion of the Prophet Muhammad. As for us, we are too shy. We are too humble before him to be able to look at the Prophet in the face. So that when he dies, we can now start telling you about him. We are not bold enough to come and start looking at his face. Anas said so, rahim, radiallahu anhu. So amongst the companions, there are darajat. Yes, there are darajat. Warafana ba'dakum fawqa ba'din darajat. This is the sunnah of Allah. Even amongst Anbiya and Rusul, there is darajat. There is darajat. And their head is Abu Bakr al-Siddiq. radiyallahu anhu, Atiqullah, is the head of all the companions. Nobody comes in front of him. And then Umar radiyallahu anhu. And you know what? The way Umar radiyallahu anhu will respect Abu Bakr and Siddiq, even the far lower companions may not have as much respect for Abu Bakr as much as Umar has. Radiyallahu Umar, he respects Abu Bakr and Siddiq. Go and read the Qissa of Hudaybiyah. Umar respects Abu Bakr and Siddiq. Subhanallah. Was he not the one who pushed him forward on the day Abu Bakr and Siddiq emerged as the Khalifa after the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam? And he said, anybody who wants to come in front of Abu Bakr, let him come. Let me see. Let's see. Pushed him. I suggest Abu Bakr as the Khalifa. Who wants to come and challenge that? Abu Bakr. So I'm saying that if we go back to the books of Hadith and Athar, we can come out with ages when younger companions will be saying Rahimahullah regarding the older companions. So Jara alayhi amalu salafi salih. Did you get that answer? Alhamdulillah. Inshallah, it will be the last question today. Bismillah. Amin wa antum. You need a clarification on a hadith of the Prophet. I pray that I should know it, you. Aywa wa hazlun fiha jiddun salasatun. Three things. Jiddun fiha jiddun. Jiddun. Wa hazlun fiha jiddun. Fiha, yeah. Whether you are serious about them, it is serious. Whether you are joking about them, it is serious. Jiddun fiha jiddun. A seriousness regarding these issues is seriousness. Wa hazlun fiha jiddun. I am joking about them. It is counted as seriousness. He counted four things in some reports. This hadith, there's khilaf amongst the scholars whether the hadith is even authentic. You find some of the people like, I don't like referring to him, but I will, Amr Abdul Munim Salim, he grades this hadith even munkar. But the correct thing, inshallah, is that this hadith is alal aqal hasan. You read the fuller details of its discourse on in Irwa al-Ghalil by Imam al-Albani rahimahullah. And many others before him had authenticated this hadith. So the correct thing is that the hadith is authentic. That these three things, when you are joking, it is serious. And when you are serious, it is what? Serious. The first one is what? At-talaq. Sorry, ask your question. It's regarding nikah. Because I started with what? Talaq. So I started with nikah now. Count it as number two. The third one is al-itq. Freeing a slave. If you have a slave, you say you are joking. You are free. You say, no, you are not free. What is the ruling? He is free. And then this your Yoruba jokes. You say, I will marry my daughter to you. Don't worry, in fact, she's your wife. She's his wife, oh. If he comes the next morning, I beg, bring my wife to me. He said, who's your wife? Say, no, you married her to me. He said, I was joking. He will read to you this hadith. Don't joke that you are marrying your daughter to somebody with anybody. Do we understand what I'm saying? Somebody is joking. Say, he has one, not me, he has one daughter. Say, he give his daughter to so and so. You know what, so and so, mom, I marry her to you. And it's a joke. Brothers, joke this joke. Don't joke it again. You can see it from the joke, you can count as what? Expensive. Because in the Sharia, it means that girl has become his wife. Especially if you are the father of the girl. Khalas, you are giving him signatul akd. The next thing is I start asking you, how much mahar do you want to accept? You say mahar, say yes. May Allah protect us. That is the first thing, nikah. Likewise, divorce. Don't joke divorce with your wife. whom I divorce you. And I was just joking. It is counted as one divorce. Don't joke divorce with your wife. So these are the three things: freeing a slave, marrying a woman to somebody, and then what? And then divorcing a wife. May Allah protect us. Anas. Now. Alayhi salatu wasalam. The same prophet said, alayhi salatu wasalam, don't be a stingy man. Alayhi salatu wasalam. Now, it does not contradict it. Okay. We'll say it now. Jazakallah khairan. You know the question is asking? That hadith, if a man jokingly says to another man that he marries his daughter to another man, and then we take it like that, that is seeger to act the code. Okay. How about the girl's permission? Huh? So he's asking, how do we not now need the girl's permission? It is the job of the wali now to go and get that girl's permission. If the girl is still a little young girl that does not have quwwatu tamyiz, she does not have the ability to say, I will marry. She doesn't even know the meaning of marriage. That girl will be his wife until the girl will be able to become mature to say, I concur with my father or I don't. If she concurs, she becomes his wife. If she rejects, then the marriage will be dissolved. Likewise, if it's a girl that is matured, she is able to say, I will or I will not. She can concur with her father, especially if this happens a lot in the north. Many times young girls just leave their father to choose a husband for them. This used to be the case in the Ummah. When children knew their father are people who will not give them to a man that is not responsible. So once their father says, this is the person you must, inshallah, I agree. Go to the books of Tariq and Sirah, you see it is very, very common. So if the girl is someone who is matured and trusts the father's actions, she will just accept. In fact, she will be asking the father the date for the consummation and all of this. But if she's someone who thinks that there is something under her, or she doesn't just want the man, then she can say she does not want the man. And that will invalidate that sigatul act. Do you understand? Do they contradict? Assalamu alaikum. Subhanakallahumma hamdika. Ashhadu an la ilaha illa anta astaghfiruka.